can I have my coffee?
No, you put it all the way over there.
Because I needed it out of the way so I wouldn't knock it over onto the table. Jacob, how do you think the audio is looking? Shall we play it back to see if it's entirely fucked?
I think if it's going to be fucked, it's going to be fucked. If it's not, it's not.
Colin, you have no valid opinions.
That is that's what happens every single time to us.
Let's go for the trifecta of three fucked up weeks.
Welcome back to the Dime Comic Bros podcast. I have returned.
Without your innocence.
Yep.
Why buy a comic that might cost more than a dime? Come meet the brothers who are here to waste your time.
I have returned to rejoin with Jacob and Spencer, my co-hosts.
Monkey. Jacob is silently peeing.
We watched a movie.
I am stealth.
I am stealth.
Dude, you would get a catheter just like all the time.
Oh, that shit hurts so bad.
Have you had one before?
Yes.
Yeah. Big tube, small pee-pee.
Yeah, it was small pee-pee.
That's nice.
Why do they even make it a catheter? Why don't they just make it like a condom that goes over the pee-pee and just like drains that way?
It doesn't work like that. The tube has to go into your bladder. That's
gravity.
So it just already fucking empties. You're not even peeing at all.
Yeah, no.
Colin's balls hurt now.
Yeah, I know all the feeling of it.
He's got the phantom pain.
Oh, dude, that was awful. Especially when they're like, okay, we're gonna put it in. They start putting it in, and you're like, ah! That's what I was feeling. I'm gonna be holding my dick this entire recording.
Oh, so it's just another normal week.
Okay, well, we watched a movie. What movie did we watch?
We watched X-Men, the 2000 movie directed by Bryan Singer, pedophile, from a screenplay from David Hayter and a story by Singer and Tom DeSanto, which is based on comic books and shit.
Colin was holding his dick during the movie, too.
Colin is currently holding his dick.
I am currently holding my dick. The opening to this movie goes hard.
It does.
For no reason.
I wouldn't say for no reason.
But I mean, I would say for no reason, because by the time that we get to know what the bad guys actually want to do, it seems very, like, boring to me. And I don't think I ever finished this movie growing up.
Really?
Yeah, because my dad didn't really want me to watch the X-Men, because Booba. True. Because Mystique. It was because of Mystique. Magneto's cool as shit. Wolverine is cringe, but cool, but also cringe. Rogue is a child. Mystique is hot. She's hot. Sabretooth is definitely a homosexual.
He's definitely there.
He's definitely a homosexual. I'll tell you that right now. Big boom on Statue of Liberty, make everyone gay, but they stopped the gay men.
It is the gay
stopped game. The other gay men, yep, from making the straight world gay with the gay beam.
The gay beam.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I actually enjoyed this a lot more than I did last time.
Yeah, me too.
So I liked it as a lot as a kid because that's what I had access to. And then I think I grew this harboring resentment of this entire franchise because a lot of them sucked. And they set a lot of really weird trends with, like, the 2000 superhero movies, but then I just didn't watch them for a couple of years. Like, I hate people who are like, X2 is my favorite superhero movie. I think you need to grow the fuck up. There are much better options. But despite it aging a bit rough, it
would you expect us to wear yellow spandex? We wear leather.
Yeah, like,
practical effects. Nom.
I agree. I would much rather take janky wire work that hasn't aged well because they're actually getting yeeted around.
Yes.
I miss wire work. Back when we used to do that. And then not just smooth it over with CG.
I love wire work.
I don't know. I didn't expect... It's It's a lot smaller than I remember, like, scale-wise. Yeah. Like, it is a big, bad threat and whatever, but, like, the actual cast is pretty small, and the setting is almost entirely within the school.
I forgot about that.
I thought it was way longer than it was. It was, like,
really short.
Yeah, it was over before I knew it last night, and I was like, whoa, that was strange. I thought it was, twice that time.
Yeah, I remember it being way longer, but I'm probably thinking about, like, X2 and X3 or something like that.
X3 feels stupidly long because it's incredibly mediocre. Mm. It is, like, the most movie to exist. Mm. I still have zero feelings in regards to Halle Berry as Storm. She has, like, no character.
Hardly in the movie.
She's really weird.
There to just be like, are you okay? After someone gets zapped in the face.
Yeah, I see boobs and that's it.
It's really weird because, like, the comic character is an incredibly, like, bizarre and, like, there's a lot of background to that character. Like, she's literally a god and also a princess. It's fucking nuts. She's very complicated. And then this one's like, she controls the weather and she's black. Like, that's it. Like, that's the entirety of her character. She
zaps people with lightning sometimes, but only if you piss her off.
Yeah, otherwise she'll just hit you with snow.
Yeah, real weird. Cyclops is a cardboard cutout.
Yep.
Typical, though.
I would argue no. I think bad X-Men comics are
50-50 then.
Don't even look at my girl.
I think Cyclops, when done well, is like, he's like the Leonardo in terms of, like, if you can write him well, I think it's a good barometer of your skill. Because, like, he is the least interesting one, but also he's like Captain America, but a dick. Like, that's kind of how he is. Like, he is usually right, but he's a douche. And I don't know. He's just kind of there.
And a cuck.
Sort of, but not really.
Yeah.
Huge act man.
Classic. Huge act man.
Classic.
Huge jack man.
Literally no notes. He's still great.
Talk about the soundtrack.
Yeah, the musical score bops real good.
Wow. You did that
so actually, well. Actually, I really love the beginning of this movie. Not just, like, the Magneto stuff, but, like, once we get to see Rogue and Wolverine meet, and then Wolverine wakes up and he's like in a science lab area. He flips the fuck out. I'm like, oh, that must really suck for him, because he's been like he has dreams about places like this. He like has kind of memories, but not memories, because he can't remember correctly. And just being this place is probably freaking him the fuck out.
Yeah.
And so just seeing that and mixing with the score was so good.
So fucking hot.
It was so good. That was probably, like, one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah. I like Jean Grey more than I remember.
Same.
Another character in the comics that I like a lot, but I don't remember being very well explored in these movies outside of love interest. And she's definitely stripped down and simple and simplified, but, like, the performance is solid.
Speaking of love interest, I enjoy the last scene where the two old guys are talking funny sounding words over a chess game. And we were saying last night that the Marvel world is going to have a very hard time topping those castings and that chemistry.
I mean, they already had to... Fox had to do it once, and then they did it somehow. Like, imagine trying to do Lightning in a Bottle twice. Which I think is why they're so scared to recast it, and they keep, like, pulling in stupid X-Men cameos and crap once they bought Fox. Uh-huh. Like, they have the most uphill battle.
Yes. One must imagine Sisyphus happy.
Sussy. Sussyfuss. Mm-hmm. Really bizarre note that I have about this that I still...
Sussyfussy.
Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear.
Snuffleupagus.
That shit scared me.
Really?
The OG Winnie the Pooh, like, bad trip when they're like...
No, those are the Heffalumps.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Snuffleupagus.
I've never seen
was on Sesame Street. Like.
The Heffalump bad trip was bad. It scared me as a child.
I don't
know
what you're talking about.
I'll find it for you.
Okay.
There's a moment in Black Panther during its third act where there's a digital camera move. It's in the sequence that everyone hates because they had to basically rework the entire finale, where the camera follows T'Challa, like, grabbing onto like a pillar or something and doing a full rotation around it. And that is literally aped from this movie where they had a CG Logan do exactly that on the Statue of Liberty. The physics of it makes zero sense. Huh. He like, you know, slices onto like one of the pointy tiara bits of the statue and then like swings around it. But the way the camera moves is fucking insane and has like no sense of weight or gravity.
They're black and brown.
I haven't heard this in so long.
I know.
Has the ones for like elephants?
Yeah, but they're because they're characters in a kid's cartoon or kid's books. You know, it's like how a kid would say it. Like Tigger. He's a tiger, but dumb child. That probably also fucked me up as a kid. I only remember liking it though. Ugh.
Well, how does that fuck you guys up?
When you're like four. It's
spoopy. The Heffalumps are transforming into scary monsters and they've got plaid on and they're scary.
Plaid is scary. Did you not watch like Dumbo as a kid when he does drugs?
That was bad too.
That's different. That was different.
They're very similar.
They're adjacent.
They are side by side in my brain.
Mm. Do you remember back when Disney had nice 2D animation like that? Mm. They made.
Yeah.
That shit's so pretty looking.
Yes, it is. So we're done talking about X-Men.
I think so.
Yeah, I like this more than I thought I was going to. It's been probably like 3 or 4 years since I've seen it, and my last viewing experience was kind of lame. It's pretty simple, but it functions.
You like simple. You are simple.
Oh, thank you.
Speaking of simple. I read.
You let go of your dick.
He's not committed to the bit.
I read. Rengor, The Last Vulgarian, issue number 2.
Pooba Lady?
Yep. Following the events of last issue, where Rengor saved Booba Lady from the cultists, and now they're in the forest, and he's all like, "Ooh!" And they heard a dog. Now they're Rengor is hanging from a post on a cart, and Booba Lady is hanging out in the cart with a doggy, and this man is carting them away because he wants to get money for Rengor. Then they go to this place. I cannot remember what it's called, but it's this like post that's called like a city for some reason. And the Booba Lady's like, "Oh my gosh, I heard about this city. I can't wait to see it." And she sees that it's like a dump where they eat humans and shit like that. And so they sell, he's going over there. The bad guy that has Rengor and Sheens is going over there to sell Rengor because he is the last Vulgarian. So and so happens, to sell Vulgarian, but they also like the cannibals are like, "Oh cool, we buy him and the dog," and the dude's like, "No, that's my dog. He's my friend," and they're like, "This is enough gold for 4 dogs and 4 humans, you take this." And he's like, "No, that my dog." And he starts a fighty fight. And Rengor is like, "Unchain me and I'll help you." He's like, "You think I'm that dumb? I'm not gonna do that." And then Rengor's like, "Ah, fuck this." And he gets off anyways with the chains. And he fucking smacks everyone around. And by the end of it, they Booba Lady and him escape. Bad guy that got them chained and dog die. Because dog bad. Bad dog. It's bad dog. Booba Lady and Rengor escape. And she finds out that Rengor only saved her because there someone gave him money to go save her. Because she is actually a nun, basically, and she's supposed to be in a cathedral, and but she wants to see the world, so she leaves him chained up to the cart and rides her horse to the nearest town, which is this big, evil, scary place that you'll find out in issue 3.
It's Boopy.
Mm-hmm. Booba Lady's still hot. Not as much Booba as first issue.
Oh no, it hooked you though.
It did hook me.
It got you.
It got me real good. Jake is real good at hooking us in with boobies. Yep. I liked it. I read issue 3.
How much for this issue?
I didn't look at the price. It's like...
Like a couple of bucks.
Probably.
Certified hoodie classic.
It is.
Where'd you get it?
Stairway to Heaven.
Well,
yeah.
It's good.
I also got the colored version of the first issue. So finally got a colored version. And it's a full-size issue.
Well...
pretty colors.
Spencer, what you get?
I read Sin City Volume 2, A Dame to Kill For. It is
He could have said Doctor Strange, okay? Leave him alone.
This is true.
You know, I can pull a 180. We can turn this car around.
Dude, I will go home.
As with the first volume, it is written and arted. I love and hate that we use that term. It's so stupid. by Frank Miller, the GOAT, but not really.
Yeah, don't call him the GOAT.
I know, but he is legendary and also infamous.
He's more like a donkey.
Yeah.
It follows Dwight, a... private investigator, you know, photo taker of all the seedy couples doing their gross sex things, who has a troubled history with booze and prostitutes mostly. He gets contracted to work a job. He gets contacted by like his ex-lover wife girlfriend, Ava. She is the femme fatale of the story.
Ava Mendez?
No, although in the film she is played by Ava Green, so there's that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he gets very straightforwardly pulled back into her clutches. This is surprisingly not very... this is a pretty straightforward story that is very aware that it's just doing the noir tropes, which I liked, actually. It was a nice companion with the first one. She has this whole elaborate scheme. She pulls him back in. She ends up freaking him out enough that he kills her husband, who's a rich lord. It's a whole bunch of crazy bitch stuff. Dwight is a fantastic character. I think he's on par with Marv. He's a very different character. I went and did some research, and Miller basically described Marv as, like, the anti-hero, and then Dwight as the everyman of sorts. He features in multiple stories moving forward. I haven't read those, but he does pop up in the movies and such. He is, I believe, the protagonist with the most amount of stories, and the middle of this book crosses over with Marv for a good portion. So most of this story takes place before the end of Sin City 1, where, you know, Marv dies. Frank Miller has a really weird writing style, which I don't know if I like it or hate it, where he calls all of these different... he refers specifically to all the different plot lines and how they intersect as threads, which is a very normal way to talk about things, but like it's like a trademarked Sin City threads. It's on the Wikipedia page. It's really weird. But that seems to be the way that he kept track of how all the different stories intersect, because every book adds more context to the stories before it, which is really cool. So this one I think works pretty well just as a direct companion. It has Marv for maybe 25% of the book's runtime or page count or whatever. Dwight ends up manipulating him into helping him kill some guys. There's a lot of contrast and comparison shown between Dwight and Marv and how, you know, we're not so different, you and I, and stuff like that. I really like Dwight's character. I wouldn't say arc, because he doesn't really have an arc. More of, like, his characterization and the texture given to him. Marv is very big and over the top and silly, but Dwight is a bit more of an everyman in a sense, but he has very he refers to his struggles internally as like a beast and like fire. Like, he is his life is hinged on him having a lot of discipline. Like, he goes to the bar and drinks ginger ale type guy. So, you know, he shaves his head and his face every day. He's very straight-laced. And this story is basically about him, like, degrading and going a bit bonkers. It's just really good. I was really impressed with this. I might actually like it more than the first volume. It's a lot more straightforward of a story. The way it intersects with other threads. Yeah, the way it's interlinked with other threads is more complicated. I did some Wikipedia surfing because I can't help myself. But if you're just reading the book, especially if you read it separated from the first volume, it's just a cool story with some solid characters and I think better artwork than the first one. The first one is iconic. It had a like really big influence on like reviving noir in the 90s. But this, I think, has way better like character work and like
silhouette. Are there better booba?
There's more booba.
Better?
Some panels, some are worse, some are better.
I think he peaked at the panel of Mars parole officer in the bedroom with the gun. I think he peaked at that panel. Right.
Probably.
There.
You peeked at that panel.
I stared. Menacingly.
I think it's less over the top, so some of the artwork isn't as easy to appreciate like the first one, but I think there's twice as many faces in certain panels here. I think the detail work is done a lot better and more consistent. The proportions are a lot better. The framing is better. It feels a little bit less stream of consciousness, I guess, in terms of how the art kind of functions. The flow of reading it works really well for that. I genuinely recommend it. Also, a really weird note, this was... There's at least two Hellboy cameos in this book. I think there's more, and I just didn't find them. There's little Hellboy references. Like, a guy at a bar will be wearing a Hellboy t-shirt. And I think, because I'm fairly confident, this story was written and originally published well before Hellboy was out, because it's using, like, the movie font and stuff. I think the re-release of all the trades, they digitally did that.
What?
I don't know. I can't confirm it. I'm gonna look more into it because it's very funny. But like random characters will have like Hellboy keychains or whatever, and like it's neat. It's a nice little thing because it's Dark Horse. It's the same publisher. I just don't think Frank Miller would have done that on his own, if I'm being honest.
I don't think so either.
I think he's too much of a dick. But it was nice. I don't know. I thought it was neat. It's also funny because one of the guys who was wearing a Hellboy shirt at a bar was with a gang of Nazis, so that doesn't make sense. But it was just a neat little, holy shit, that's the Hellboy logo. What's up with that? I bought it for 20 or 25 bucks. It's about the same size as the first one. Like I said with the first volume, when we talked about it, I really like the way that they're collected. The cardstock is nice. They're very firm. Good book. Very good book. Jakob!
I read Monstress. Monstress. I read that.
Monstress.
Volume 1. It has the first 6 issues. It's written by Marjorie M. Liu, and it's illustrated by Sana Takeda.
Tequila.
Yes.
Taquito.
Takeda!
As the Goodreads summary says, it's set in an alternate matriarchal 1900s Asia.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Damn, let me get my passport.
Yeah. Damn, Barbie Land, here we go.
Deco inflicted steampunk, blah, 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 blah. So there was a huge war. And there's monsters and witches and this world's pretty complicated. You kind of just jump into it, and they're saying a bunch of words that don't mean anything until you read like quite a bit of it. I think. The first issue didn't have one, but every issue after that had a page where the professor like pulls you aside and gives you a chalkboard explanation of something. That definitely killed the pace of the story, but it was important to finally understand what they were talking about a little bit. The main character has powers because she's got an evil beast inside of her that might be an ancient god, but I don't know. This felt very anime manga-esque with its type of story. And with the art style. The art style was very... It looks really good, but it's got, like, some manga tropes. Like, every character has long, flowing hair. Or there's, like, flower petals on the wind all the time.
Matriarchy.
Hush. Also, there's talking cats.
Hell yeah, I'm so going there.
Yeah, same. Matriarchy, dude.
What Narnia wardrobe do I have to walk through?
That one.
That's a black hole.
It's actually a brown hole.
In my mind, this was like headcanon. What if Bayonetta was like not at all horny and turned into a comic? It's kind of the same lore, or the lore feels the same of like the witches and how they interact with other witches and the world and all that noise. So that's kind of the best description I have for this. It was very strange. It was pretty dense. It was kind of hard to get into, but it looks really, really good. I got it for free from my magical library app. There's, I think, 9 of these trades.
Hell yeah.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
I don't think I'm going to continue reading the series. It's well made, but I wasn't hooked enough to keep going. Maybe someday, but not right now.
Jeez.
Hook, line, and sinker.
I'll try to find some art for Colin to...
So, I read...
Yeah?
Like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron. I borrowed this from Jeff. This is a novel, or a graphic novel, written by Daniel Klaus. And it follows... How do I explain this? This book opens up with us following this character going into the porno theater. And he's watching pornos. And there's like always new ones rolling. The theater's like the movie doesn't end and then people leave and the next people come in to watch the movie. The movies just keep going. And new ones just get, like, reeled onto it. And he watches this video. Our main character watches a video about how it's... watches a video about how... how do I explain this? He watches a very weird porno that has nothing to do with sex or nudity at all. It is all the weird fucking... weird fuck-up. Fuckery shit that gets people off, and then he sees this woman.
Smut film.
Yeah, sure, but it's
like kicking puppies or what?
No, like dressing up as a little baby and crying to the woman in latex.
Okay.
With a latex mask and shit like that, or getting kicked in the balls while your diaper's on and shit like that. Sorry, hold on. So then, the lady in latex takes off her mask, and the main character's like, oh, I recognize that face
from
somewhere. And he gets flashbacks about, like, how he knows this girl and shit like that. And it just shows you, like, the downfall of the relationship type of thing, but no dialogue. So he just goes on a...
You can see, like, it's kind of manga-esque. And there's definitely, like...
Yeah, kind of. The top panel sucks so bad.
Some shots where, like, the cat character becomes a caricature of a cat, like, I've seen in manga before. So, I don't know. It was just influenced by manga, I think.
I gotcha.
Sorry.
No, you're good. So, we just follow the main character. He goes on, basically tries to go on a road trip, but he tries to borrow this car from his buddy. And his buddy's like, dude, I don't know why you keep calling me. You never want to hang out. You just want to use my car. You know what? I'm sorry. Just come over. I haven't been feeling well. Just come over. And he comes over and he finds out that this dude has, like, crawfish in his eyes. And it's like, what the fuck? And he's like, yeah, they, like, took my eyes out because I couldn't see very well. And they put it in a freezer, and this was to eat out all the bacteria and infection. So I can't really see. You can borrow my car. I don't care. I have no use. You can borrow my car. I have no use for it anyways. And so he takes the car. Guy gets pulled over by cops. They keep him in the car for like 2 days straight as they're doing like a weird road trip thing. Like they keep falling asleep at like motels and shit. I don't know how the fuck this works. And then eventually they're like, yeah, hey, how about this? Do you want to go to jail or do you want to fight? And then they tie him up. They give him like a little mouthpiece and they like cover his eyes. And they start beating the shit and piss out of him. And they leave him there with like no clothes on. They take his foot and they like cut a sigil into the back of his heel and leave him there. And then he gets picked up by these cultists who are, like, crazy whatever the fucks. That they follow this one guy all the way. They prophesy that there's going to be this whole sex war and women are going to win. But the guy who's the leader of the cult, he's going to be the one man left to repopulate the whole world. And all the women are for just for him. And I'm like, Jared Leto?
Oh!
Jared Leto? What? And he kind of looks like him. Like all the women are like named Sun or whatever, and the like Moon or like a fucking Rock or fucking Jerk Me Off type of shit. And as this goes on, he's just going on these, he's trying to get to like where he's going, and it's hard to explain. And it ends up, he finds this woman, he stays at this woman's house, and her daughter is like this fish hybrid, and she tells him a story about how she met basically Namor in like an ocean in Florida and got her pregnant, and then the child is a walrus fish looking grossness, and she tries to hook up with our main character, and she's like, I left you a present in your room, and it's just tons of like fish eggs that she like popped out apparently that she wants him to fertilize. This book is, like, the grossest shit. Jeff, I'm sorry. This book is the grossest shit I've ever read, and I was traumatized. I stopped, and I skipped so many parts, and I went all the way at the end, and I watched the last page is basically, he's with the fish girl, and he has, like, all his limbs gone. I can't even remember how that happened. Because everything's so fast. There's, like, so fast-paced and it's so gross that you want to, like, skip to the next thing. So you're like, oh, I don't want to see that. It's so... Jeff, why do you own this book, man? It's so... Jeff knows way more about some of the, like, niche comics than I do. And
I think Jeff just has issues and a weird collection.
He has a very weird collection. I borrowed this book from him, and I am happy to return it back.
Did it at least have good art somewhere, anywhere?
I mean, it's mediocre art. It's not about the art. It's all black and white. It's like supposed to be a noir, like a gross noir setting type of thing, mixed with just fuck up, just whatever the fuck is disgusting. The art's mediocre because it's just about the story. And the art is just supposed to make you feel gross. Which is fine. It's doing its intended purpose. So it's not like... For being a book, I applaud it for being original and, like, coming up with something that's, like, crazy thing that I've never heard of. So to me, that's, like, good on them. Good on them for having good dialogue. It had good dialogue, at least between characters and stuff. Like, you could tell someone was a different person. You didn't have to follow the bubble line, you know? I don't know. I'm giving it, like, a 2 out of 7.
That's not the worst ever.
No, it's not.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
It's 2 out of 7 for me. I will never read this again.
Yeah, I think we got that.
2 cups out of 7 fish eggs.
I think it was 7. I think I literally almost threw up when I saw that page. Like, this book grossed me out so bad.
Okay. I think I'm the only one who had a good time reading this week.
Yeah.
Not to just tread on previously treaded ground by Jacob again, but because I recently got the books and I wanted to read them, I read Wonder Woman Hysteria.
Yeah.
Every time I read it, I'm like, yeah, that's right. Wonder Woman Hysteria, The Amazons, which Jacob talked about like a month ago. 2 months ago? 3 months ago? Whatever. I got it off of Jacob. I fucking love this book so much.
I told you would.
I know! And I had a strong feeling about it. I just hadn't gotten the motivation to buy it myself. And then you're like, I don't really want it.
Beans.
Yes, lots of beans. Basically, it is the story of the Amazons and before the Amazons, all of the different Greek gods and their relationships with each other before humanity and after humanity and all their internal politicking and their philosophical meanderings about philosophical shit. It's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who I have never read any of her stuff before, but I am very interested now. She's apparently fairly well known for a very long run on Captain Marvel, which is cool. The writing is surprisingly nuanced in its, like, implication, but the dialogue is actually pretty straightforward to read, at least for me. The gods all have very distinct speaking styles and intonations, which I think play off of each other really well. And I think, biggest positive for this is that it's a story about Hippolyta. She's a very important character in pretty much any interpretation of the Wonder Woman mythos. But in most of them, she doesn't really get her own stories. She's like a background character or a plot element, I guess. But this is a story about her creation and then her making the Amazons, basically, which I think is really, really cool. The first issue was illustrated by Phil Jimenez, and it is my favorite of the three art-wise. It's very good at nailing different visual styles and different visual languages for all of the different gods and goddesses. They all look, it looks insane, dude. It's almost overwhelming. And actually, no, most of it's overwhelming. Each issue.
The booba is overwhelming?
There are, not really. There's some nudity, but it's not very sexualized. There's just so much going on in these pages. I'm so glad that this is in the prestige, like, Black Label size book. Because the art is so fucking pretty. I really like how they have Hera look because she's got all the eyeballs. I really like the eyeball motif. I don't know why. It's really cool. The second issue was illustrated by Jean Ha, which I thought was solid. It didn't really keep my attention as well, visually speaking. It felt a lot more flat. And the third issue was illustrated by Nicola Scott, which is really, really, really fucking good as well. I just like having a different story about different characters in a similar mythos. It's not a Diana story. It's not a Artemis story. It's not a, what's her name? The new one, Yara Flor story. It's not actually about Wonder Woman. It's just about the mythos, and it's about, like, Wonder Woman's mommy. And I like that. It's cool. It's really thorough in its philosophical meanderings, it's not so dense and up its own ass that it makes it, like, unbearable to read. But there is enough there that it definitely seems like this was, like, a well-thought-out passion project. It doesn't come across like a... This is the least hack job book I've ever read in my life. I think that's a good way to put it. I've read some books that I like that are kind of like kind of hack jobs, you know? They just rushed out the door. This is like someone pitched this to DC and then begged to do it for years. I really like that.
It's evident by the copy of the pitch in the back of the book.
Yes. Stupid hot. I want them to do more of these. That seems to be the plan by the... creative teams. I don't know if DC has greenlit any further books, but this is a cool little like mini series on the Black Label imprint. And whatever price I got it for from Jacob was more than reasonable because it's great. I'd pay like double cover price for this thing.
Are you trying to fuck a deaf bitch?
No, but I'm prepared to.
So what are you doing? What is that?
That was sign language, yeah.
That's what I thought.
I had the thought in my brain of, like, I forgot what T was, so I had to run through the whole alphabet to try to figure out what T was.
You know the alphabet?
Yes.
In preparation to fuck a blind bitch. Totally is.
No, that's the secondary language that he took in high school.
I was going to talk about Eden Lake, but because it had Kelly Riley and Michael Fassbender in it, but there was no notes. Bad movie. So instead, I'm going to talk about Suspiria from 1977.
Ooh, sex movie!
It's
sort of.
Not even a sex movie.
Yeah.
This girl from America goes to Germany, and she wants to be a pretty dancer. And she goes to pretty dancer school, and the Germans are like, pfft, Americans, am I right? And it looks very strange. There's a lot of hard colors in all of the lighting, and some spooky things happen, but it's kind of weird, and everybody's like, you're just... crazy woman, none of that weird shit's happening, it's fine. And then there's a crazy twist at the end of the movie. So I watched the remake.
I was gonna
first.
Say, yes, the remake is so good.
The remake is much better than the original. And it feels very weird saying that, because...
You have committed a sin.
I watched the remake first, and that movie, I think, is better all the way around. There's a lot less weird lighting. There's still some, but that's... In the remake, it's clearly for a reason, and it's, like, drawing your eye to things. Whereas the OG Suspiria was just, like, the red light's gonna turn green because... It's a sharp contrast and it's spooky. But also, I think the remake does the final twist much better. It's like, oh, I'm watching a movie about dancers and what the fuck? Where did that come from? The OG one had... a lot of weird dubbing for no reason. Like older movies did it a lot, but it was very evident in this movie, and I don't know why they did it. It was just... It sounded weird, and it looked weird, because they recorded the audio after the video. It was strange. Oh, it's fine.
You know who else is fine?
Hold on. I think I gave it 3.5 stars. But I don't remember. Must look.
Nope.
Yeah. Not gonna push that one out?
Yep.
Good idea.
Yep, 3.5 stars.
I will
it landed.
Shit your dishwasher.
I don't have a dishwasher. That's my girlfriend.
Exactly.
It landed in between this year's Indiana Jones and Barbie.
Whack.
So there.
Barbie was so good.
Barbingus.
I loved Barbie.
We know.
Do you know who else loved Barbie?
Our patrons. I know at least one of our patrons loved Barbie. Because there's a guy at the convention that's going around with a sign that said, vote for Barbie or Oppenheimer, and we both voted for Barbie. And there's somewhere on the internet is a video of us voting for it. Somewhere out there.
Somewhere out there in Barbie land.
Yeah. But all right, Spencer or Jacob, do the thing, please.
But what if we sent the atomic bomb to Barbie land?
So a toy that was made in Japan gets sent to America, and a toy that was made in America gets sent to Japan. Got it.
We owe a thank you to our patrons, Jeff, Lorenz, and Caitlin. They help keep this show on the road, the lights on in the house, and food in our tum-tums. Money is cool. We appreciate it. We have a bunch of different rewards tiers on our Patreon, including early access to a lot of our podcasts, exclusive access to segments and clips from our shows, stickers, bookmarks, posters, all sorts of fun, cool stuff, art commissions by Colin, and so on and so on. If you want to support us financially, go to patreon.com/DimeComicBrosNetwork. It's greatly appreciated. Also, subscribe to our free Substack newsletter. Jacob prepares a recap every week that goes out with the episode with pretty pictures and funny written words. Because Jacob is a silly boy.
I can't find a video of you guys voting for Barbie. I tried.
Damn.
It's probably out there eventually. It might not even be finished video or whatever.
Just go on the dark web. You can find it. Also, we thank you to our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire. They have all sorts of gaming and comic book needs. Tabletop RPGs, card games, Pokemans, plushies, foam swords, wooden swords, metal swords. They got a big Batman. You can touch the big Batman. Actually, don't touch the big Batman.
Yeah, don't touch the big Batman. Don't touch the statues, please.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
Don't touch the weeb shit swords.
But do touch our poster on the way in. They give us support. They let us put up our stuff in there. Take some of our business cards off the back table. Send them to all your friends, relatives, distant third cousin, four times removed. And then come back next week for three nude news dudes.